Alistair Galpin's first attempt at running a public event outside the box was a hopeless failure. He cringes when thinking back to the year 2000. But this roadshow of sorts, which he only just managed to drag to a shaky conclusion on no experience, taught him some basics of event management and its related fields. Therefore, this was much more than a traveling project for Alistair. It was a journey of learning, and it formed the foundations for his career in world record breaking. From that ghastly period, he's come a long way towards running impressive events. For one, no longer would he walk blindly into a sizable job backed up by hopes of good luck. Here's the story of Alistair's year 2000 in the Republic of Ireland, in his own words. Hopefully, you won't be left feeling embarrassed on his behalf.
Unable to resist the idea of conquering a novel challenge in a foreign land, I chose to fly into Dublin Airport in the Republic of Ireland. I'd heard the country was famed for its romantic reputation, although for me, it was anything but, from the hour I walked onto Irish soil. The cheerful official I made the mistake of asking for the underground into the city barked at me. I knew nothing about the place, except for having seen a magazine snippet about its Celtic Tiger, a massive industrial and economic boom. But that useless information did nothing to comfort me as the day faded away and rain began bucketing down. Full of hope and with a spring in my step, I spent days approaching charities and organizations, hunting for good opportunities I'd know when I found them. I even tried the Prime Minister's office, but wasn't happy that he didn't consider me worthy of a reply. My dedicated search ended in a small environmental charity office in the city centre, the Irish arm of a bigger international organisation. The manager, somewhat taken aback, blinked repeatedly in disbelief that I'd chosen him to suggest he fund me to travel the world while researching environmental issues. Seeing opportunity, though, he politely suggested my energy would be best applied to a national project of some sort. I took the hint. It was the first of many I'd received from the Irish who were sceptical of my seemingly boundless energy. I agreed to consider dreaming up a national project, and quite quickly I was burying myself in the vague plan to put together a roadshow, to be run throughout the Republic, to raise funds and awareness for environmental issues. When the manager mentioned he was considering a roadshow to spread awareness about national environmental issues, everyone in the charity office nodded approvingly, looked at me, and smiled in silence. I swallowed nervously, realizing I'd just attracted high expectations. Nothing was in place for me to set out with, no staff, no budget, and no skill I could draw on. I thought, in ignorance, that scenario would be a great challenge I'd be proud of. I was soon to be cut down to size. Craig, the staff member I'd be reporting to, offered to arrange accommodation for me in a dirty, low-income suburb near the docks, which I accepted, having nowhere else to stay. I spent my first few evenings there sitting on the pier watching mullet, a species of fish, feeding near a murky sewage farm outlet known to overflow regularly. I was awoken early one Sunday morning by a deafening beat downstairs, drumming and shouting. The dust in between my floorboards was bouncing visibly. My flatmate, Tomislav, and I soon learned that the landlord had decided to open a community centre on the lower level of our house. I wondered what they'd had for breakfast. That's what I needed. Tomislav began legal proceedings against the property owner, and the health authorities shut down our rental. Just before he and I were forced to evacuate, he too kindly offered me a place to stay with a friend of his, Tamsin, but only for 2 weeks. To protect her, Tomislav threatened to kill me if I spoke about what shady business my next host was involved in. On the second hand, stolen and then donated, reconstructed, faulty bicycle I'd begun a love-hate relationship with, I loaded everything I owned in Ireland and made my way to the new house. Tamsin and I got along really well, apart from my having to phone on every occasion I wanted to come to the house. It wasn't long, and my welcome there ran out. Craig, desperately wanting to keep my interest, sent me to the charity office to make do with the bare facilities there. It seemed I was turning into a homeless bum by night, not quite what I'd hoped my challenge would include. Very quickly, Craig again offered me sleeping place, this time on his own home floor. This was the 13th house I was moving into, and it was only one personal struggle of many I'd faced while in the country, famed for its hospitality, probably because of what I'd chosen to do. And being house number 13 did nothing to comfort me either. I'm suspicious of that number. Craig suggested we try running a huge event, but I settled for a roadshow which I was moderately confident I could cope with. Pushing my diabolical private circumstances aside, I soon started to plan where to appear in 16 locations across Ireland on a clockwise journey spanning 23 days. I needed to undertake the roadshow before the wet winter started, or we'd get no crowds. They'd all have migrated into the nation's alehouses by then. My first 10 weeks were spent on the phone, repeating myself to uninterested authorities until my head was spinning. I couldn't see what purpose these officials served, to be honest, and I tried hard to excite myself about having them order me around. But a far bigger problem was looming. The immigration department had lost my work permit, which I thought was a bad practical joke, before I was severely reprimanded and given 24 hours' notice to evacuate Ireland. Just hours before my flight deadline, somebody found my papers, and my respect for the department soared. I had no time to lament the unnecessary stress this had caused, and I immediately resumed working from Monday to Sunday to avert further problems, often 12 hours a day. I lived on £10 a week, hoping my project would soon pay off. I was often hungry, tired, and I felt alone. I learned how to save on virtually everything, from cheating bus fare to walking into shops of all kinds and asking for whatever I needed at the time, free. Donated items became the only benefit to voluntarily torturing myself as I was. I found most local authorities tiring to deal with when arranging appearances in towns across the country, partially because I was constantly frustrated by not understanding how Ireland worked. Among things I was told by the authorities was that I would not be permitted to park in pedestrianized streets in case my exhaust fumes gassed the locals to death. Strangely enough, I never saw a single Irishman who'd been gassed by other vehicles parked in walking areas. Arguments were pointless and wasted a lot of my time, so I continued following procedure which I thought must have been written by a roadshow hater. Permits I'd applied for in Wexford seemed to be falling into place until the day we arrived there. I had read through the National Festival Event Guide to avoid being in any town during another activity, but by the start of the roadshow, the Cork authorities were still refusing to issue me any permission in case of an event clash. In Killarney, the authorities spoke of closing down my event if the noise we emitted was any louder than on other days, even though the resident drunkards seemed to have perfected the art of neighbourhood disturbance. I had to pay to use a loudhailer in Tralee, even though the wind blew much of what I said away. The Sligo authorities refused to put anything in writing, even though I pleaded for it. Mind you, I wasn't impressed by the Athlone venue making me sign an 11-page contract. And so it went. I was beginning to feel exhausted by an ever-increasing list of obstacles, but I made reasonable progress towards triumphing over the conditions I viewed as ridiculous. In a desperate attempt to get as much pre-roadshow media coverage as possible, Craig brought in an academic. Leonard was a hard worker who would later join me on the road. Even with his time contribution, I wasn't sure how long I could carry on forcing myself to try everything I was asked. Craig suggested cash bucket collections. The amount of effort I spent with the police to get permission was unbelievable, only to raise a little money for charity. I had visions of the authorities rubbing their hands with satisfaction each time I failed in a request to them. Craig then suggested raffles. On my second-hand squeaking bicycle, I went through a large part of Dublin inner city approaching shop owners and slowly collected three large boxes I stuffed with raffle prizes. These included everything from expensive jewellery to soap dishes made from Japanese bricks. Lucky winners to be, I thought, they'd be getting prizes worth more than I was earning. I was already envious. To attract attention to the team when soliciting donations, I hunted everywhere for costumes, but without success. In the end, Craig had a friend send a pile of shockingly coloured chicken suits into the city for me. Soon it came time to look for a band, also as a means of holding public attention. Craig urged me to take someone he knew, but as I questioned the fidgeting youngster about his electric rock band, I began to suspect he was horribly unreliable, especially since he couldn't take his gaze off other patrons' drinks. How much positive attention he and his friends would attract, I couldn't tell as I rushed back to my desk. From so much running around, both my boots had split and my clothing had been repeatedly stitched. But without a steady income, I was stuck. Even the hard-done-by aging men with whom I'd line up at the soup kitchen were asking which industrial rubbish bin I was occupying. So, I cheekily walked into a national outdoor shop and promptly asked for longs, a fleece, an anorak, and boots. The kind and understanding man issued these to me. Free! He must have had a soft spot for destitute emigrants. Looking neater, I began confidently asking all over for volunteers. Only one unsuspecting youth responded to my appeals. I was grateful and put him straight to work like a slave, walking across the city with an endorsement letter from me, basically demanding free food. When the poor guy gave up, I wasn't angry at all, because, in fact, I felt that way myself. Lucky him. He escaped what I couldn't. I took over the food collection task by approaching a supermarket chain. They lost my application request, even though I'd been phoning 3 or 4 times a day to reconfirm details. I became convinced that one of their conditions of employment was for management to suffer from short-term memory loss. The competitors' Dublin outlets each granted me a maximum donation of £5. In one shop, I mistakenly chose £5 and 1 penny worth of cereal. The manager claimed it exceeded his budget. I stormed out to attend to finding the insurance I'd been battling to secure. At long last, I found an agent who was prepared to insure me, even though he'd ignored my phone calls for weeks. Perhaps he was too busy forgetting to remember not to forget. To my dismay, upon hearing more about my plans and how time was becoming critical, he suddenly increased his quote by 700%. I saw stars for a second, but I know I should have hugged him with delight. It began to look as if the only way I'd begin this roadshow was by borrowing from a stranger. Then something positive happened to poor little me. I was surprised to see a permit arrive for an application I'd made. It was for a bucket cash collection at one of Dublin's biggest sports stadiums during an international soccer match. 11 of us from the charity shook buckets at that match as thousands of zigzagging Irish and foreigners alike descended on the stadium gates from pubs filled to capacity. We earned as much cash that evening as I'd earned in the previous month by going door-to-door nearly every evening. I hated needing to beg from people in their own homes, particularly when the aromatic dinner was temptingly in view. Now I had just enough to pay the insurance. Zach, who had come along on the trip, had raised the most at the stadium and celebrated his congratulating with a quiet visit to the first pub he walked by. The insurance was then dealt with, but plenty of other problems seemed to find me. The office staff suggested I look for sponsorship, but at first I put the idea aside. I was so busy trying to urge the police to issue me dozens of permits. The same police, I'd stupidly told, had no right to search me, because I hadn't recognized their authority some weeks earlier when the black leather-clad motorcycle riders identified themselves by their Gaelic name, Garda. Local authorities hadn't sent most of their permission letters either, even though I continued to see to a host of laborious duties. To help focus my thinking, Craig suggested I visit the organizers of a big fun fair. I explained my situation, half hoping the European ladies would adopt my project. Impossible, was all the encouragement I had hurled at me. I left, feeling more nervous than I'd been an hour earlier. The pressures advancing on me demanded that I exercised stronger willpower by the week. So I concentrated on ignoring the funfair manager's negative vibes and soon became positive enough not to collapse on the pavement in tears. I approached more than 250 companies over the following weeks, considering the environmental values of each before I called, offering to advertise for them in return for their financial contributions. To my surprise, small sponsorships began arriving. Either they were gullible, or I'd said something right. But requesting finance from so many in such a rush while under stress meant that I made mistakes. Word of irregularities spread, and I had to talk my way out of double standards again and again while trying to get people's money. Those frosty conversations left me in cold sweats. I felt like a self-made con man to my own disapproval. Faster than I'd anticipated, the last-minute rush hit me like a wall. Scores more volunteers who'd assured me of their help simply never arrived. The office turned into chaos. I brought in boxes of raffle prizes, clown suits, thousands of leaflets, camping gear, and more. I'd basically taken over. Some permits still hadn't been granted, so I had to arrange for someone to stay in the office, chasing officials. I winked and left the poor lady to it. She soon regretted offering. Many offers of accommodation had fallen through, because quite understandably, people didn't believe I'd succeed. TV crews which had shown an initial interest pulled out because they didn't think the planning had been properly done. That was true, but I took the cancellations as a sharp insult because of the lengths I'd been to, especially since I was fighting the clock by then. I'd prove myself, I resolved. We were due to begin the roadshow on a Sunday. At dusk that Friday, Leonard and I collected the van I'd succeeded at getting sponsored. Within 30 minutes, I was in a dreadful traffic jam down a very narrow road in which four lanes of traffic were impatiently squeezing their way along. They must have been overdue for their next drink, I mused. Somebody bumped the brand new van, skyrocketing my attention just when I needed to be focusing. But I kept focused on the outside while crumbling on the inside because my six-member team needed a confident leader. The three-member band was constantly to one side, but I hoped they'd join the rest of us. Zach, Leonard, and Aiden from the charity and I had been getting along well. I was very pleased to have them with me, being a more tolerable breed than the officials I knew. Zach, who couldn't stop thinking about his next drink, was a very good fundraiser working professionally. Leonard, the man who'd seen to all my media, was terrifically helpful, but so cynical. I'm eternally grateful I didn't need his permission to do my project. And Aiden wanted to promote environmental issues while experiencing the country, but I bet he regretted going with me. With these six young men, I was about to see Ireland the hard, non-recommended, painful way. I had organized and confirmed with over a dozen volunteers to help run the horrid task of cash bucket collections we intended to do on our big Sunday in Dublin's Grafton Street. I was as ready as I could be under the circumstances, and by that I mean I was as confident as a cowering dog. I sincerely hoped the first day of our roadshow would turn out positively. I wasn't in the mood for another car crash, a police demand, or a government penalty. On the morning of our takeoff, Craig, Leonard, Zach, Aiden and I came down to Grafton Street, which was milling with pedestrians, right in the middle of the city. We were full of energy and expectancy, but I was secretly ready to become invisible. The band hadn't arrived, and we parked the sponsored van with a smaller car apprehensively alongside the area I'd been granted to work in. To my disgust, it was right next to a road construction site. Fantastic location! I moaned so loudly, the pedestrians closest to our stand backed off. That was a bad call. But there wasn't time for negative thoughts. We offloaded the table, sponsorship boards, heaps of information and clown suits, and set to work, chatting to the friendly public from our charity stand in the heart of Ireland's commercial centre. To put my energy to good use, Craig got me to put on a Superman outfit, as if I didn't feel like an idiot about my awful roadshow already. I marched up and down the main street inside the foamy garments, somewhat hoping no one would notice me. Thousands of people heard my environmental message, and I think I had more women jumping on me that day than on any other day I spent in Ireland. I must have looked momentarily more appealing to them than a pub. Eventually the band arrived, played for about half an hour next to the rest of us, and then disappeared to drink. The others for whom I'd arranged the attention-seeking clown suits wouldn't wear them. I wonder why. Plus, the pre-arranged samba band couldn't make it, so I was under pressure to hold crowds by parading in my Superman costume. By the end of the day, Superman was ashamed to admit he was exhausted. But I couldn't rest until the little cash we'd raised in the name of environmental awareness had been counted and prepared for banking, among other laborious tasks I'd have to get used to. Monday morning arrived, time for us to head to Arklow. I was dreading it. Aiden, Leonard, Zach, and I were less than impressed that the band arrived the very minute we were leaving. I should have congratulated them on what was their start to a minimum effort for full reward strategy. In the two vehicles, we raced out of Dublin south along the coast. My first radio interview request came through from a local station, wanting a live chat about what would be happening down in Arklow. I gulped, screwed my eyelids closed, and hoped to fool the listeners that I was highly experienced at such interviews. My effort was a flop, and the best thing was putting down the phone. But by the end of the roadshow, I'd become quite accustomed to speaking to tens of thousands of people about things environmental, and I was confident it did help. We set up in the deserted graffiti-covered bandstand, the most popular area in the tiny town. Leonard had a bad start to the day. Some naughty youths decided to throw empty bottles at him to amuse themselves. Perhaps he looked like an academic turned graffiti inspector. Without letting that affect our mood, in my coloured suit, I started parading up and down nearby, calling to passers-by for much of the day. I was expecting to be knocked unconscious by a flying glass bottle, but the local kids must have had more respect for Superman. Carlo was our next stop, where I discovered the corporation had booked our parking space a week too early. I was ready to authorize the booking officer's early retirement on the spot. But I grinned and sorted out the dates, only to be awarded parking space next to another active building site. Zach and I tried a raffle, but the only thing that worked was me calling the odd passerby over to pop a pound or two into a tin, stick their hand into a secret box, and pull out some prizes. Meantime, the band snuck off to amuse themselves elsewhere and brought their vehicle back at dusk, conveniently in time to join the rest of us for a meal. I was so annoyed, I had to restrain myself from offering to name their band the Three Parasites. If only I'd left early for the hostel that night with Aiden, Leonard, and Zach. A man who couldn't stop mumbling alcohol-inspired theories in his sleep in our dormitory kept Leonard, whose bed was alongside, awake through the night. He was in a foul mood the next morning, which added to the waning team spirit. We arrived at our designated parking spot in Wexford. Even though I showed my letters of permission, both vehicles immediately received a traffic fine. I guess that's one way of the locals expressing how excited they are to see visitors. By the time I got the fines retracted, the band had wandered off to another pub. Upon discovering that, I optimistically stepped into a tea room across the square, explained to the pleasant girl I was leading a roadshow, and asked for free meals. That's exactly what Leonard, Zach, Aiden, and I got, and it was the more pleasant of two things I remembered Wexford for. Someone kindly offered us accommodation that night. But Leonard went out for a late, quiet drink, only to find himself locked out of the stranger's house at midnight. Once we'd set out on the road, Leonard and I heard that our hosts had unfortunately reported us as being highly dangerous con men. He exploded with disapproval, which entertained me throughout our drive into Waterford. We set up in the town square, while I tried to downplay the stress I knew was developing amongst the team. And then Elvis arrived. What impeccable timing, I thought. The middle-aged impersonator stumbled up to us, combing his hair so much that lots of it was blowing away. "He wouldn't be looking like the singer for very long with that habit," my team joked. This man was so drunk he fell over like a dead tree and didn't reawaken, comb still in hand, leaving us with something to giggle about to start the day for a change. Our 2 days in Cork were a memorable disaster. Partly because of a jazz festival, we were having more challenges than I'd anticipated. The corporation had planned to place us at a building site and noted our date of arrival inaccurately, so our assigned parking area hadn't been prepared. But I coped. I eventually parked the vehicle in the middle of very heavy traffic, with the hazard lights on as it began to drizzle. That was a brave move. But I was prepared to handle the consequences as part of the bad day which followed, made worse by the band getting drunk. Amid gusty winds and slashing rain, a contracted photographer arrived. There I was, stuck with very few people around, and the photographer asked, "So where is your band?" Noticeably caught by surprise, I had to lie. "They're on lunch, and they might not be capable of returning." I bet the man thought I'd suffered momentary mental lapse. The following day, the band arrived at the same venue 4 hours late, so I dismissed them on the spot. The weather was so foul all day that once again I erected the tent shade, from where we tried cash collections with dismal failure. As we took down the cover after a disappointing day, loud, uncontrolled teenagers jumped on it enthusiastically. With pride, they scuttled away before I had time to thank them. I was unable to decide who I liked more, the kids or the band. While wondering about that and trying to drive away, I discovered that my vehicle's battery had gone flat because I'd left the lights on for 2 days in a row. Seeing me, a sympathetic Irishman with a 2-meter-long rope decided to tow me. I nearly crashed into him many times, but finally the van started, and I admit, I couldn't have been more pleased to be accelerating out of Cork. We drove through to Tralee in freezing weather and unpredictable windy blasts, where I was greeted by a team from the corporation which had forgotten to reserve our parking. Had the winds blown away their diaries, I wondered? Eventually, I was told to park anywhere, and almost unbelievably, we earned a lot of cash that day. It was tremendous to see a community willing to contribute to environmental awareness matters. Although very cold, our experience in the town was a much-needed pleasant change. By the time the four of us arrived in Thurles in more chilling rain, our enthusiasm for standing outdoors was dwindling. We had just begun setting up reluctantly when one of my sponsors called. The man was quite determined to visit what he expected to be an amazing roadshow, and I'm sure he was completely unimpressed when he saw our pathetic situation. I felt humiliated, and a constant dribble of rain pouring off my nose didn't make me feel any better. After a wasted day, we made our way to Aidan's uncontrollably talkative friends out in the countryside. Because the driving rain had been excessively heavy, a local whom I asked for directions suggested we may need to take a boat down a great river in the area just to get away from our host's home. I wasn't sure whether to think of that as a possible adventure or even more disaster. So I simply stared back blankly. After a night of listening to incessant chatter, I struggled to drag my team away to the two vehicles. We came into Limerick later than I'd wanted to arrive, only to be told that the corporation had forgotten to reserve our parking once again. That came as no surprise. The same wind which had passed over the Tralee Corporation must have blown this way. I was now convinced I ought to have started the roadshow without trying to secure any parking permits. Finally, I was told to park anywhere I wanted, but that attracted parking fines, which I only managed to avoid by being very nice to the traffic wardens. I received an invite to talk on TV from a man who was also fixated about having me explain my most private activities to him and to his friends employed by media. Leonard, being suspicious of nearly everything and everyone, thought this man might have been trying to drag me into a ploy in which one charity humiliates another. I wasn't so sure. Yet, hearing that, I decided we'd race through to Galway, leaving later in the day than we were happy to escape our unique invite. The West Coast town was a lovely stop, and we had a great atmosphere to work in. We held a raffle, but by the time it came for the draw, there was only one person standing around our table. With smiles and laughter to shirk off the obvious awkwardness, the other three and I handed out gifts to the lucky person who was equally as delighted. It was little things like that which made me happy to be with my team. Castlebar wasn't as positive. I'd been told we'd been allocated a brilliant location, a back street car park which was whipped by unrelenting, freezing winds. My mobile rang just as we were reluctantly setting up the stall. It was community radio. "Tell listeners what they can see at your wonderful roadshow today." Thinking fast, live on air, I spoke of whatever I could to avoid giving away our location. How embarrassing. But I couldn't tell the truth about failed cash collections and raffles, hassles with authorities and more, could I? Or perhaps I should have. Then a few sympathizers might have visited us out of pity. Enthusiasm amongst the team tapered off just a little more in Athlone, our next stop. Nevertheless, my mood was still buoyant enough to keep the others active, and we had a busy day in the mall, which meant the cash collection buckets were jingling loudly. Great! I was reasonably satisfied when we packed up there and drove out to two middle-aged men. But my contentment vanished instantly when our hosts led us inside. Dirty items lay strewn on the couches, overfilled rubbish bags blocked all the passages, and the smelly kitchen made me want to begin a fast right there. It looked as though a hurricane had hit this house, and yet the residents didn't seem to notice. We were glad to head into the center of Navan in the morning, where every breath we took didn't serve as a pungent reminder of what the local rubbish bags were filled with, only to find other charities using the areas I had booked and confirmed. These volunteers politely but firmly edged my team to one side, so, despondently, we made the day another uneventful bucket collection in a town that I recall for being unwanted in. Next, it was down to Drogheda Town Centre on our approach into Dublin, which I dearly wanted to be a success for us all. As was the routine by then, we laid out piles of magazines, pamphlets, and other information. This time, we were on the steps of a large church. We got far more interest in our pamphlets and magazines than we'd planned on. A howling wind arose and didn't stop, blowing everything out of its path throughout the day. Keeping the stall in one place was a challenge until we gave up. It wasn't what any of us called a brilliant day. The four of us had one day left, back in Dublin's Grafton Street. Although worn out, we made our way down to the capital's main pedestrian street a second time. We had to park some distance away and walk to our locality because our vehicles once again posed a people-gassing hazard. Even though my team hadn't gassed anyone to death in 3 weeks that I was aware of. Craig had been a big help to me by generously spending days asking many volunteers to join us for a big final push. Sadly, but hardly unexpectedly, very few arrived. With as much determination as I could muster, I dressed up in the Superman outfit for the last time and paraded around for hours as my first roadshow wound to a close. By day's end, we had collected lots of cash, and Grafton Street had once again been visited by my first attempt at running a public event, one I would come to consider a delightful nightmare, but an exasperating challenge I'd been determined to see through to its end. Unexpectedly, Craig called out, "That's it!" And the team decided we needed to head straight for a pub, which even appealed to me, despite the troubles I'd faced with that band. It was time to tell of our experiences and laugh at one another in good humor around a table of drinks. Zach was the brunt of a few jokes for his inability to survive a roadshow without three or more delicious pints a night. Aiden, everyone felt, was safe to spur for his frequent low moods, often directed at me for how I handled the realities of Murphy's Law. Leonard received a healthy dose of humor for his eye-catching driving skills. One day in particular was memorable. He was trying to get the smaller of the two hire vehicles out of a parking lot, drove forward and bumped into someone's car, reversed and hit my van. It wasn't long afterward that he pegged the car on its sump on a rock in a host's driveway, much to his annoyance. Then there was me, the one to be gently laughed at from across the pub table for constantly being rushed and stressed by everything all the time, as if I couldn't get enough of the feeling. I was graciously showered with compliments for having drawn hundreds of pedestrians to our stands across the country and for boldly speaking to thousands more over radio stations about the environmental issues facing Ireland. Nevertheless, I felt the whole thing could have been a lot better if only I could have driven myself harder for longer. But this roadshow confirmed to me that the closest to Superman I could ever become was sweating inside his fake costume. Thank goodness it was over. And the entire charity could now see the funny side to what had previously been a pain to us all. It took me 3 full working days to close down what had taken me 3 months to organize. I think the authorities must have been delighted to hear that I was finally disappearing. And that was fine with me, because 3 good things had transpired. The charity's cash flow saw an immediate improvement, their membership was rising, and the public awareness increased marginally too. Knowing that I'd had a minor positive impact on environmental awareness in Ireland meant a lot to me. I was then told by other charity leaders that this had been the first environmental roadshow in the Republic's history. No wonder it had been so tremendously tough. They could have warned me. I felt a moderate sense of pride at having initiated and managed it, to the end. Looking back, I'd taken a chance, because I know that without taking chances, I would get nowhere in life.
As you know, this was Alistair's first endeavor at organizing and running a public event. More than that, this excursion into project management highlighted his strengths. It exposed his weaknesses, and it gave him the knowledge to develop the appropriate skill set. Over the course of his subsequent world record-breaking career, Alistair has applied a great deal of what Ireland taught him, and more about how to structure and manage events. Most notably, he is sure never to forget that thinking up a dream adventure and then trying to make it a reality on small change simply does not work. It all needs to start with a solid plan. Among those projects which have tested Alistair's project management abilities to the maximum include making the world's largest bowl of soup, the largest bottle cap sculpture, and most radio interviews in a suspended cage. And he's sure that more trying challenges will arise. But Alistair believes his experience will serve him well, and he's ready to take on the world. Or, when thinking back to the year 2000 in Ireland, is Alistair ignorantly offering to take on way too much for his capacities?